You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Barrett. Coming up today at 6 on 1A+, it's the Friday News Roundup. Judge Jackson moves a step closer to a seat on the U.S. Supreme Court, and the president tells U.S. businesses to prepare for an onslaught of potential Russian cyber attacks. Those stories and more today at 6 on 1A+. Now the last remaining mask mandates in Wisconsin have expired, and numbers of new cases, hospitalizations, and deaths related to COVID-19 are way down, about where they were last summer. Lots of good news. On a possible downside, we're seeing the emergence of a new subvariant of the Omicron version of the coronavirus here in the state. But how worried should we be about it? You can join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about the latest coronavirus trends, about the new subvariant? What has life been like for you in a post-mask mandate world? How do you feel about the way things look and seem right now? And do you have kids in schools, kids unvaccinatable, like under the age of six right now? What are you seeing out there? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. Dr. Daniel Shirley is assistant professor in the Division of Infectious Disease at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Dr. Shirley, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
Can you talk about some of the latest numbers we're seeing here in Wisconsin and around the country, a decline since that Omicron-related peak?
Yeah, fairly universally throughout the United States and Wisconsin, cases went down pretty rapidly. And then that was followed by a decrease in hospitalizations and death, as you mentioned. And that's really the big positive here is that, you know, all that was reflected in less people in the hospital really sick with COVID.
What led to this? Was it just that Omicron peak kind of burning itself out as these waves seem to do?
A little bit. I think it's a kind of a combination of things. You know, there was good vaccination in our state with some, you know, boosting. And then, like you said, a huge surge of Omicron. And those two things together, along with some people who got vaccinated that also got infected, did create kind of a situation where there was some protection against further infection and cases went down.
Now, I don't want to start spiking footballs here yet. We've had good stretches before, only to have a new variant or whatever come back. What are some, before we get into this new subvariant of Omicron in particular, what are some of the concerns you have looking toward the future?
Well, I think, you know, obviously the good news is cases went down, hospitalizations went down, but the things we don't really know are how long the protection lasts. It seems like we've hit a time in the world where this worked pretty well, but we don't know the protection from vaccination or infection with Omicron, how long that's going to kind of be a wall of against future protection or against future infection. So I think another good thing is that we're going into a season where the weather is nicer so people can get out and just be less close to other people that could be infected. So I think we're in a mode of close monitoring at this point, which is good that we can do that.
Talking to Dr. Daniel Shirley, assistant professor in the Division of Infectious Disease at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, looking at the latest COVID-related news, numbers, and trends. And you can join in with your questions, your thoughts at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. All right, Dr. Shirley, we have this new now sub-variant of the Omicron variant. I imagine a sub-variant is less distinct from what we had seen before in Omicron. What do we know about this subvariant?
Yeah, so there's a lot of letters and numbers involved, but yes. All of the Omicron variants have sort of a subvariant. So, in this case, the new one is BA.2, and that's what's causing a lot of cases and a rise in those cases in Europe and Asia right now. We have this subvariant in the United States and in Wisconsin also, and it actually is replacing the previous variant of Omicron. But the good thing is that that so far hasn't increased the case level here in Wisconsin. So it's just kind of replacing the cases we do have with a new subvariant. But of course, we're watching super closely because it has resulted in increased cases in other places.
One hope I had seen, and I don't know if there's enough data to back it up yet, was that because Omicron affected a lot of people here and this new subvariant might be pretty similar to that, an infection with a previous Omicron variant might give more protection than, say, other variants of COVID-19. Does that make sense to you anyway?
Yeah, I think that's kind of the running theory. And similarly with the vaccination, that, you know, that protection hasn't really changed if you change the Omicron subvariant. And so that's why I think we have lower cases. But as I mentioned before, we aren't exactly sure how long that lasts. So there's still some monitoring to do and, you know, basic precautions still, because there are cases still around.
Let's talk about vaccines a little bit. I've seen some of the vaccine makers looking at fourth doses, but not generally calling for them for the general public, mostly for people with immune system problems that make them not react as well initially, not get as much of a response for immunity from the 2+1 booster that a lot of people have. What are you looking at when it comes to who might need an extra dose?
Yeah, as you mentioned, you know, this is a really important point, that there are a significant number of people who have an immunocompromising condition. And, you know, we were just talking about that case rates are low, but the risk, if you are immunosuppressed, of getting Omicron or this subvariant or whatever, is really high. I mean, they could still get very sick. And the vaccine for those individuals didn't work as well. They don't build antibodies in the same way. And so one way to sort of boost them is to give them an extra dose. And so far, that is really the only population that we have rolled that out in the United States. Other countries, they have done some studies to show that, you know, it does result in boosted antibodies in some populations. And that might be important for people over 65, for instance. There was a study, I think, with Moderna also kind of submitting the approval request. There will be a lot more data upcoming about, you know, who should consider getting a fourth shot and when is the best time to do that.
What do you see as the biggest vaccination priority right now?
I think getting the data to make sure that it still stays protective against severe disease and hospitalization, because in the end, that is actually the major point of a vaccine, is to not make it where people get super sick and ended up in the hospital. As we know from the previous surges, if a lot of people get sick at the same time, it causes a lot of problems for the healthcare system.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Dennis is with us in Two Rivers. Dennis, hi.
Hi, as far as subvariants and other and full variants or whatever taking over, I've heard it in the past about variants outcompeting each other. I just wonder, does that really happen? And what does it really mean when a variant outcompetes another? I'll hang up and listen.
Interesting question, Dennis. Thanks. Dr. Shirley, how do viruses outcompete their peers?
Yeah, great question. And, you know, we kind of envision them competing, like fighting it out, but it's more just the natural way of things. They're, you know, viruses are always mutating, and sometimes they get mutations in places that make them more contagious or more dangerous. As we've seen with COVID, the original COVID wasn't as contagious, and it's sort of gotten sequentially more contagious as time has gone on. And so when that happens, it outcompetes because it, you know, it's just more likely to spread, and therefore it overtakes the other versions. I think, you know, people sort of debate whether that increase in contagiousness then decreases the severity, but that isn't inherently true. It could be either way. Luckily for Omicron, it seems like it has become slightly less severe, or at least it's caused less severe disease across the board. But that doesn't mean that you can't have a severe case in some instances.
Thanks for that call, Dennis. We're talking to Dr. Daniel Shirley, assistant professor in the Division of Infectious Disease at UW's School of Medicine and Public Health. We're looking at the latest COVID data for Wisconsin and beyond, as well as questions of vaccines. Coming up, we'll look at vaccines for kids under 6 and the latest progress there and other pandemic updates. Still time for you to join in at 800-642-1234. If you have children, have they been vaccinated? If you have children under 6, are you hoping that some kind of vaccine is successful and gets approved for that age group? Are you still taking precautions out in public, or are they on the shelf for now? What would it take to lead you to go back to them? Are you worried that we're loosening up too fast, or are you happy with where we are? Call 800-642-1234 with your thoughts or questions. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with Dr. Daniel Shirley, assistant professor in the Division of Infectious Disease at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. We're looking at the new Omicron subvariant of the coronavirus and other pandemic-related news. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions for our guest, with your thoughts about the current state of COVID. What's on your mind? Call 800-642-1234. Let's go back to your calls now. Louis is with us in Oconto. Louis, hi.
Yes, my question is, with all the home testing, are we undercounting the cases? Because I know that, like in Oconto and Outagamie County, their health department doesn't want to know if you test positive or not. So actually, are the numbers higher than what is being published out there?
Oh, interesting. Louis, thanks for the call. Dr. Shirley, if we're testing ourselves at home and not calling it into a public health agency, are we missing some case counts? And if so, does it matter?
Yeah, it's a good question. We probably are missing a few, but some of the things that we watch to make sure we have a good count of cases is, before you're admitted to the hospital, we do testing in many places. Before procedures, we're still doing testing in asymptomatic people. And then, of course, there are still people going to the testing centers and getting PCR testing. The other point about this is a number that people have been watching all along, which is the percent of tests that are positive. So even if you decrease the total number of tests, we can watch that percent positive. And all of that makes us think that people still are getting tested and that the rates are what they say they are at this point. This does bring up another big point, though, that home testing is great and it has its benefits, which is it's readily available, it's fast, accurate. It keeps people at home when they're sick and they don't have to go to a place to get tested. But it doesn't allow us to test for the variants to do the sequencing. Mm-hmm. So there still is a place to have these centralized testing with PCR. The other important part about testing right now is that it is important to test if you feel sick. So if you're sick, stay home, get a test, even if it's a home test, and then report that to someone, usually your doctor, because now, because cases are lower, we have more treatment available than we did when cases were so high. And so if you're a person with a medical condition or you don't know, it's worth discussing with your doctor to see if you qualify for treatment.
Thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Francesca joins us now in Elkhorn. Francesca, hi.
Hi there. I still mask up when I go out into crowded indoor settings, and part of it is that I've had COVID a couple times. I know we watch wastewater treatment to find out what kind of caseload is going on out in reality, but what I really wanted to know was, how do we know what is causing long COVID and what percentage is long COVID happening with this new subvariant?
Francesca, thanks for the call. Long COVID, I think a lot of questions about that still, Dr. Shirley, and I'm guessing it may be too soon to tell with Omicron. Correct me if I'm wrong.
I'd say that's accurate. Yeah, we just don't know. But even just knowing that it's possible, which definitely is possible, is a good point, because even if you have a mild case, you could end up with some of these long-lasting symptoms. And, of course, nobody wants that. So it's its own reason to try to avoid getting COVID in the first place. It's sort of on the flip side, if you were someone who is worried about vaccination and potential side effects from that, we have a lot of data about that and the risk associated with it. Or lack thereof. And we do know that this long COVID, or even just if you didn't qualify as that, just symptoms that last longer than you would expect from a normal respiratory virus, that definitely occurs.
Francesca, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Francesca mentioned, Dr. Shirley, that she still masks when she goes to crowded public places. Mask mandates are gone pretty much everywhere now. Do you have thoughts on whether people should think about wearing them, or if something might happen in the future, what are the benchmarks you'd watch for to suggest that people wear them?
I think that the CDC, when they changed their guidance a little bit about the rates or the thresholds, that is an attempt to try to give some kind of marker of, you know, when your county or local area is reaching a dangerous level of COVID in the community. My personal kind of thought about this is a little bit what was said, you know, in places that are higher risk, and most of that has to do with not exactly knowing what you're getting into, is about how spaced out people are, how many people will be there, who's going to be masked or not, how the ventilation is in that space. Those kind of spots are still definitely some place to consider still masking. I think if you had medical conditions, especially immunocompromised, you should consider masking when you're around other people. And then there's this just kind of general rule that everyone could should consider, you know, I'm going to go out. This is something that could be spread with minimal or no symptoms. And I still feel like I want to protect people around me. If there's any chance I have COVID, I don't want to give it to someone who could be super vulnerable.
Talking about the latest COVID-related news with infectious disease expert Dr. Daniel Shirley at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Still time for your question or thought at 800-642-1234. Dr. Shirley, we talked about vaccines, you know, who might need that fourth vaccine. Let's talk about the people who can't get the first one yet, kids under six. What are we watching for now when it comes to potential vaccines for five and under?
Well, I think we've gotten some news recently that, you know, Moderna is about to sort of ask for the initial approval. And then I think the question is, you know, who should get it and when, and all the data that we'll get from those studies will help us make that decision. I think a lot of parents right now over the last several weeks have dealt with this question for sure, and maybe even had a child that had COVID. And once that happens, it spreads pretty rapidly in families. And then, you know, it could travel towards vulnerable people and cause a problem.
So, but for parents who are eager to get that vaccine, it sounds like maybe not going to happen in the next couple few weeks.
Yeah, but I think it's definitely a positive that it should be coming soon, the opportunity to do that. And, you know, anything that can kind of cut down the case rate, especially if cases start ticking back up, is going to be a benefit.
Now, one of our callers mentioned, and you've mentioned it as well, treatments for people who do have COVID. What is out there that seems to be working the best, that's the most promising now that we have in our toolkit that we didn't have at the outset of this whole thing?
Yeah, I think people have likely heard of oral antiviral therapies like Paxlovid. There's another one. I think Paxlovid probably is the front runner for the first treatment that people would try to give you if you called in and you qualified. There's a little bit of sort of monitoring or at least checking of what other medications you're on to make sure there's not an interaction. But otherwise, it seems to be highly effective and pretty easy to take. The trick is you have to start taking it within a certain amount of time of when you have symptoms. And so that's why, you know, if you have symptoms, get tested, and then you let somebody know in the right time, you might qualify for treatment. We still have monoclonal antibodies, and that's another big thing. There's more always coming down the pike. And so that's another route that your physician might help you get towards.
And now we're getting close to allergy season, with when a lot of us, myself included, will have lots of random symptoms. What are the key symptoms that someone might have that says, yeah, get that COVID test now?
I think the first thing to think as it relates to allergies is this exactly how my allergies are exactly at the same time every year? That will probably be the number one thing, because there is some crossover between some of the common COVID symptoms and allergies. I think the things that are more towards COVID are cough, shortness of breath, certainly fever. And then those things that everyone has heard by now, like loss of taste or smell, that's not necessarily kind of with allergies, at least as a, you know, thing that happens just rapidly. Basically just watch, and if anything seems different than your usual allergies, I would consider COVID.
Let's bring on another caller now. Larry is with us in Madison. Larry, hi.
Hey, hi. My question is, if a person is fully vaccinated and then does get COVID, are there any documented cases of that person spreading COVID to someone else?
Interesting, Larry. Thanks. So fully vaccinated, you get COVID. In that instance, is it possible to spread the disease, Dr. Shirley?
It is. I think, you know, getting infected after a vaccination, that has been termed kind of a breakthrough infection. It's still contagious, but, you know, one, you are less likely to have been infected in the first place.
Right.
So that cuts down the risk in the broad terms. And secondly, there's some thought that your symptoms likely last less long, and therefore you have less of a chance to pass it along. But yes, there is a period with a breakthrough infection, especially with symptoms, that you could pass that along.
So if we are vaccinated and get it, quarantining ourselves for a little bit might still not be a bad idea.
Exactly. I would definitely say that, yeah, if you have symptoms, even if you're fully vaccinated and boosted, you should isolate and get a test again. This would hold true for kind of any prior infection, any vaccination status right now.
Dr. Shirley, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Dr. Daniel Shirley is assistant professor in the Division of Infectious Disease at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. We talked to him today about a variety of pandemic-related news, including the Omicron subvariant of the virus and the prospect for vaccines for younger children and infants.